A little hard to relate to, appeal to everyone. Jokes and they maybe also don't get my humor, if also possible, because it does require a very sharp, sophisticated mind. And the dull amongst you are basically a lost cause when it comes to the jokes, and you'll just have to focus on the deep Torah ideas. In fact, if you suddenly see, like, you're walking down the stairs and you suddenly see a Sean Beck guy, like, roll over in laughter, it's probably because he just got a joke I said last year in November. But there are guys who say, listen, you know, I don't want jokes, I'm here to learn, you know, I skip the jokes. So the truth is that a great man once said that jokes are good because they are funny and make people laugh. And personally, I don't subscribe to any of that nonsense. But my family comes from a town called Rupchitz, which they changed their name actually to Rupchitz not too long ago. And even recently, actually, there was a referendum that was passed in Rupchitz, and now it's called hashtag the town previously known as Rupchitz. Maybe some of you don't like Polish jokes. Well, anyway, Rav Naftali Rupchitz is one of the great rebbes. Again, which is the town that my family is from. He was known as one who taught and shared holy laughter. Holy laughter that, based on the Hasidic concept, which those of you in Rabbi David's Halachashir won't really understand this, but this idea called, which means that in all your ways you can know God. All your ways. And everything we do, whatever we do in life, could be a mundane thing, that's also a possible way to serve Hashem. And he said that even you can serve God by telling jokes, by laughing. So maybe some jokes that he may have said. It's not confirmed that he said these jokes, but possibly something that may have been said by the Rupchitzer. For example, there was two elderly men suffering from memory loss, and one of them says to the other guy, Bernie, is that a suppository behind your ear? And he says, you know, you're right. Because now I think I have an idea where to put my hearing in. Elderly couple, also suffering from memory loss. So they go to a doctor. The doctor, how can you help us? You know, we're starting to forget things. So the doctor suggests, you know what? Whenever something improves, write it down, so you'll have it. You don't rely on your memory. So later that evening, they're sitting together watching TV, and the husband says to his wife, Sadie, I'm going inside to get to the kitchen. Do you want anything? So Sadie says, you know what? Yeah, I would like. Can you bring me some vanilla ice cream? It's okay. She says, one second. Frank, maybe you should write it down. Remember what the doctor said? Come on, say, I'm just going to the kitchen. You want vanilla ice cream? She says, you sure you don't have to write that? No. Vanilla ice cream. So she says, you know what? On the vanilla ice cream, can you put some strawberries? Fresh strawberries. I said, sure. No problem. She says, Frank, maybe you should write it down. Come on, say, you want vanilla ice cream with strawberries? What do I have to write it down for? Okay. You know, can you also put some whipped cream on it? No problem. You don't want to write it down? Vanilla ice cream, strawberries, and whipped cream. What do I have to write it down? 15 minutes later, he comes back with scrambled eggs and hash browns. And she says, you see, I knew it! I knew it, Frank! You forgot the toast! The last one he might have said was, kids come back to class from recess, and the teacher says, So it's going around the room. I want to ask you what you did during recess. And you tell me what you did. And you write what you did. First grade teacher. You write what you did on the board. So first he turns to first girl, Jessica. So Jessica, what were you doing in recess? She says, I was playing in the sand. She says, in the sandbox. Okay. Why don't you come and write on the blackboard box? Great. She comes up, she writes box on the board. Next, he goes, okay, who else? Then it's Tom. Tom says, I was playing with Jessica in the sandbox. She says, great. Why don't you come and write sand on the board? Great. Then the next boy calls on, teacher says, okay, Shmuel Goldberg, what were you doing during recess? Shmuel says, well, I was trying to play in the sandbox, but actually Jessica and Tom are throwing rocks at me. What? They were throwing rocks at you? That sounds like outright anti-Semitism. Come right on the board, outright anti-Semitism. And then you'll get a lollipop. Anyways, so four questions for this evening. Question number one. Rabbi Yehuda is going to blow the shofar. He's going to lead us with psukim right before the shofar blowing. And one of them is going to be Ashrei Ha'am, actually, after the shofar blowing, Ashrei Ha'am Yodei Tzru'ah. Ashrei Ha'am Yodei Tzru'ah. Great is a nation, praiseworthy is a nation, happy is a nation that understands Tzru'ah, that knows Tzru'ah. What does that mean? What are we trying to know about Tzru'ah? What does it mean to know Tzru'ah? What should we be thinking about during shofar blow? What's the secret of shofar? Number two, there's a machloket in Rishonim. What Rosh Hashanah corresponds to? Does it correspond to the first day of creation? Or does it correspond to actually the sixth day of creation, the day that man was created? What is the svara to choose the sixth day? It makes sense to start with the beginning of time, beginning of creation, on the first day. Why choose Rosh Hashanah as the sixth day, the day man was created? Question number three seems unrelated. The Mishnah in the first parak and the fourth parak, I should say, Pirkei Avos. Very well known Mishnah, Ben Zoma Omer, Ezu Chacham, Alamein Kol Adam, Ezu Ashir, Hasameh Bechalko, Ezu Gibor, Tzitzah, Kavesh Tzitzro, Ezu Ashir, Hasameh Bechalko, Ezu Mechubad, Hamechavit Tzavriyas. Right? Very famous Mishnah. Who is a wise person? One who learns from everyone. Who is a Gibor? Who's a courageous person? One who's able to conquer his desires. Who is the wealthy person, the one who's happy with his lot? And finally, who is the honorable person, the one who honors others? What exactly is the common denominator? It's all put into one mission. What's the common theme running through those four seemingly different things, seemingly unrelated, besides the language of Ezu? What's common with those four things that's put into one mission? Finally, the last question is, what is Tashlich all about? You guys are going to go on Thursday afternoon. You're going to walk to very beautiful botanical gardens, which is one of the few sources of water you have in Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is a natural water source. What is it all about, Tasha? I go to the river and I throw away my sins? I go to the water and just, that's it. Throw away my sins. Simple. So the truth is, you have it pretty good here. The botanical garden is very nice lake there. It's a man-made lake, it's not a natural thing. But when I was in yeshiva, I went to yeshiva called Shalvin. But again, nothing against the yeshiva, it's a fine yeshiva. But there was no natural body of water in the whole Shalvin. I don't know if it's changed, I'm assuming it hasn't. So it took us to Tasha, it took us to a water tank. This big, round thing with water in the tank. And said, okay, here's where you do Pascha. I'm like trying to figure out, how am I going to get my sins into this tank? You know, isn't it, if I throw this, is it just going to bounce right back in this big metal tank? I think maybe if I stand like from the side and I can aim it, and it could hit my sins can just like land on the guy next door who, I promise you, when he snored so loud, I thought they were mowing the lawn. So what is this thing? I'm just, it has to go in the water, no? What am I tossing away here? And if it's in the water, it's okay. If it's in the water tank, it's not okay. What is the consequence of that? Don't I have to do tshuva? Well, I can just go in the afternoon, enjoy my sins. I can blow up the whole morning. Right? Don't come to davening or come late or miss shofar. And now just throw another sin. What's the big deal? I'll just throw it into the water. Fish will eat it and I'm okay. Does that make sense? So, let's start with the last issue. You know, when a girl turns 12 and a boy turns 13, that's when they realize that they have a better chance of owning a sports team and actually playing for one. But they also become a bat mitzvah or a bar mitzvah. And which is an interesting terminology, they become a daughter of a mitzvah or sons of a mitzvah. But when we refer to someone who's done averos, we call him a balaver. The balaver. One who, what does that mean, balaver? Owns. He owns averos. He's not the son of averos. He owns averos. And the difference is really, it's a profound difference, a very important difference. You see, if you, Mishnah called the zochah to your parents, and one of the first things they teach you in parenting school, which you know, kids I obviously didn't do so well, but I'm still learning, hope to finish up soon. But you go to parenting school, and they teach you, the first thing they teach you is that never say to your child, and this also, we also teach this in graduate school in education, never say to a student, to a child, you're a bad child. You're a bad kid. Remember, we once had this young couple that was a friend with us, my wife helped them out. They made Aliyah from England, they didn't have any family here, and they had children, and this father used to say to his child, come here, little mazikal. Meaning to be mazik means to, you know, to hurt, to destroy. And he called his son little mazikal. And like, so I pulled aside and said, it's not such a good idea to call your kid a mazik. Like, there are times the kid is a mazik. Times, you know, call him, that's how you refer to him, that's your nickname for him. So you may have gone to some of the Rebbeim's homes the last 2 weeks, and you'll hear how they refer to the children that call them tzaddik, or come here tzaddik. So if you call a kid a bad child, kid does something bad, you don't say, okay, you're a bad child, you're rotten. You're a rotten person. You never said it before. You say, you're a good child, you're excited, you did something wrong, you did something bad. Because if you say someone's a bad, basically you're writing them off. Right? There are people today who will blame their first grade teacher or they'll blame their parents. Whether it's legitimate or not is a separate issue. But because of this, they were raised this way, they were abused in this way. Not even, I didn't mean that, just that's the way it came out. And so they sort of put themselves in the box. I can't get out of it. I'm a bad kid. But if you tell a person you're a really good person, you just did something wrong. So it's not me. It's something outside of me. It's something external to me. It's not me. You say Balavera, I possess Averas. But it's not me. I'm a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah. I am the son of mitzvah. That's me. That's the real person. The real me is someone who's connected to mitzvahs. A bal aveir is something that I possess, something I may carry in my pocket, something that I can get rid of. Just like I can take my phone out and put it into a nice blue box on the table, I can take my aveiros and I can discard them. That's what Tasha comes to teach me. I can take my avails and I can toss them out. Like nothing. Because it's not me. It's something that I've maybe accumulated, I own, but it doesn't define who I am. So just as we can cast them off symbolically, so now I learn and I teach myself from the beginning, the first day of Aseres Yemei Teshuva, I say, just like I can cast them off symbolically, there's still work to do, plenty of work to do, but I know that it's not me, so I can actually now try to become a person, get rid of those things that prevent me from being the person that I really am. Now let us answer some of the other questions. So the Ramban, very well-known Ramban, that explains that in the creation of the world, God created everything. Yesh me'ayin, He created this matter. He calls this, it's a Greek idea, a yuli. He created this matter on the first day. Yesh me'ayin. Out of nothing, ex nihilo, He creates this matter. And then from that matter, He then proceeds to create everything else that in the first 7 days, 6 days of creation. Okay, from that matter, He creates everything else. And each day, it progresses more and more and more. Comes the sixth day. And here, God does something different. Besides just creating matter, or putting a form into matter, He then takes this matter, takes this, and it actually blows into it life. God blows from Himself, so to speak, into this matter, and out comes from Ofra min Hadama, from dust of the earth, comes man. And man is the Chiddush of man, animal as well. But man, his neshama is different than the neshama of an animal. The life form of a man is different than the life form of an animal. And now the neshama, the chelek of Hashem, Hashem blows, so to speak, part of Himself into this body, mass. And now comes man. Man is fused of neshama, chelek alo kamima, part of God, and physical body. That's that very same day, Rosh Hashanah, year zero. Right? Year zero. Rosh Hashanah, first day man is created, according to those Rishonim. God also tells man the following. He says, we call Eitz Hagan Tochal, we Eitz Hadas Tochara Al Tochal, Ubiyom Shetochal, most humans, more or less. Plus it. I push it a little bit. Don't build code around that plastic. But basically says that you can eat from all the trees, but from the tree of the knowledge, the tree of knowledge between good and evil, do not eat. And the day you eat from it, you will die. What's he saying to man? He's saying to man, listen, if you want, you can choose to stay attached to the source of life, which is God. God is the source of life. He blew life into man. But if you choose to ignore Him, God, with capital H, so you'll be cut off from the source of life. If you believe that you are an independent identity, then God will treat you as such. So one who clings to the chelek elokim, one who clings to the source of life, that part of him that is life, that connects him to the source of life, and is the source of life, so he attaches himself to that which is infinite, that which is eternal. As we say in the Davening, Chaye Olam Nata B'Sachayim. God placed eternity within ourselves, within the neshama part of us. That is eternity. God has blown eternity, part of Himself into us. But if one focuses and he defines himself based on his physical body, he has attached himself to that which is temporal, and by definition, he has attached himself to death. That neshama that He has placed in us, Elokai Nishama Shanasata be Tahorahi. It is pure and it can never be contaminated. No matter what we may do on the outside, that part of us, that Chelek Elokim Mal, can never be contaminated. Can't touch it. We can soil ourselves, our bodies, and parts of perhaps our neshama, but the part of our neshama that is pure and pristine, which is really the essence of the neshama, that you can't touch. So a person who defines himself by his neshama can never be contaminated. This idea is symbolized and experienced through the mitzvah of blowing shofar. What's tkiya shofar? So we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. We take this ram's horn and we blow into it. We blow a breath into the ram's horn. So when we blow the shofar, we're actually connecting ourselves to that same act that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did on that first Rosh Hashanah. When he took physical matter and he blew into it the source of life, part of himself, into the body. So when we blow shofar, we're actually reenacting that same activity. We know some of you may have learned this. I don't know if some of the share maybe discussed this. What is the nature of the mitzvah tkiya shofar? This is an interesting discussion. But the Rambam says very clearly, and you're not so clear about it. It's been explained by Rav Soloveitchik, his grandfather, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. They both explain the idea that the real chetza of the mitzvah of shofar is the kol shofar. Is the sound of the shofar, not the shofar itself. Sounds like a big kiddush, but when you read the Rambam and you understand the mitzvah properly, it's really pashut pshat. For example, the Rambam says that you don't have an issue of mitzvah bava aveira when it comes to shofar. For example, if you next week guys are going to be coming in here to sell the dalminim. So if you would go and grab, that comes in, he's looking, and you grab a dalminim, and you walk off with it, don't pay for it. So you can't fulfill the mitzvah of dalminim with a stolen dalminim. Why? Because it's a mitzvah of avera. It's a mitzvah that comes about through an avera. This object is a stolen object. You can't fulfill a mitzvah with a stolen object. Mitzvah of avera. But when it comes to shofar, if you steal a shofar, you can actually still fulfill the mitzvah with a stolen shofar. There's no mitzvah baba there. What's the logic? What's the lumdus behind it? Because the object that I'm using for a mitzvah when it comes to lulav, this object is a chetza shel aveira. It's an object of aveira. I can't fulfill a mitzvah with an object of aveira. But what's the object that I'm fulfilling the mitzvah shofar with? It's not the shofar itself. It's not the ram's horn. It's the kol shofar. It's the vehicle which I can produce a kol, but the kol is the chetza shel mitzvah. So even a stolen shofar can be used to fulfill the mitzvah of shofar. It's the kol shofar. The kol represents the neshama of man. Right, we're blowing into the shofar, like Hashem blew into man the neshama, and that neshama, that kol, can never be contaminated. You can't touch it. And so I can fulfill the mitzvah with the stone shofar because the kol of the shofar is the chetza shel mitzvah, and not the shofar itself. The mitzvah is also to hear the shofar, not to blow the shofar. It's not the act of blowing the shofar that's the mitzvah. It's actually machlokes in Rishonim, whether he's supposed to say the bracha of litzkoa bo shofar, or when he's supposed to say, or the mitzvah is l'shmoa kol shofar. So So Soloveitchik explains, it's not that the machlokes is whether what is the mitzvah. Is it the mitzvah of the tekiah or the mitzvah of the shmiah? Is it to blow or to listen, to hear? Soloveitchik explains that actually everyone agrees that the mitzvah, the kiyum ha-mitzvah, the fulfillment obligation is hearing the sound of the shofar. And again, he has writings for this from the Rambam about when a person blows into a pit, and you only hear the echo, you don't hear the actual sound, even though you're the one blowing the shofar, you don't fulfill the mitzvah, because you only heard the echo, you didn't hear the sound itself. So everyone agrees the kiyum, the fulfillment of the mitzvah, is the hearing of the shofar. That some Rishonim say, the bracha you say is litzkoa kol shofar, it sounds like that's the mitzvah, to blow the shofar. So the Soloveitchik says, no. They're just arguing is that when I'm coining the bracha, when I'm making a matbea shel bracha, do I say the bracha on the maisa mitzvah or the kiyam ha-mitzvah? You can often separate two things. Sometimes they're the same. When you pick up a little bit of esro, so the mice and kiyam are one and the same. But I can separate, let's say, the mice and kiyam ha-mitzvah when it comes to say the mitzvah mezuzah. Okay, there's a ma'aseh mitzvah putting up the mezuzah, but the key of mitzvah is that I have a house that has a mezuzah on the doorpost. So for example, let's say I own the house, so I have the obligation to put a mitzvah on my door, but I want to ask this big rabbi to come and put the mezuzah up. So he actually does the maisa mitzvah, he does the act of the mitzvah, but the fulfillment of the mitzvah is mine. It's not his, he doesn't fulfill the mitzvah by putting it up. I have a mitzvah, but now my house has a mezuzah. And the bracha is made not by me, even though I'm fulfilling the mitzvah, the bracha is made by him, the one who's doing the mitzvah. Doing the maisa mitzvah, you know the fulfillment is my mitzvah. Same thing with the shofar, is that we say the bracha according to those Rishonim. We say the Shmo Kol Shofar, but those Rishonim who say it's Kol Kol Shofar, it's because they hold that you should make the bracha on the Maisa Mitzvah, not on the Kiyam Mitzvah. But the Kiyam Mitzvah, he says, everyone agrees, is because the sound is listening to the Shofar. The Kol of the Shofar is the Iker part. In other words, the Neshama, we're attaching to the Neshama of the Mitzvah, and not to the physical part of the Mitzvah. And so that blowing the shofar is supposed to remind us of exactly that. That the neshama is the ikar, the body, the shofar itself, is the tofel. Okay? One is that's secondary, the shofar is secondary to the main thing, which is the kol of the shofar. So, on the day of creation of man, we blow the shofar, as a reenactment of what Hashem did when He blew life into man. And we understand, remind ourselves, that who am I really? I'm not my body. I'm not my physical self. Who I really am is my neshama. And what you want to focus on, having that blowing the shofar, what you want to focus on Rosh Hashanah, the Chol, and these days of Tshuva, is who is the you in you? Because you know, in the world that we live in, there are 364 days of the year. The world that we're surrounded by, we are defined not by our neshama. We're defined by other things. You are what you wear, you are what you eat. When you ask somebody, like, you know, you want to get to know a person, you ask what school they went to, where they're from. Right? Where did you grow up? Are you a New Yorker or non-New Yorker? Did you go, what school, co-ed, non-co-ed? Those things that seem to define us. What do you do for a living? Remember when I was in the eighth grade, so my Rebbe in eighth grade went to Halb. And my Rebbe in eighth grade, he wanted us to be at. He goes, what do you want to be when you grow up? That was the assignment. He wanted to write essay. What do you want to be when you grow up? So everyone wrote, you know, this guy wrote a lawyer,
sports marketing, this, that, the other thing. Came in after we handed it, came in and he takes his paper and he rips the paper apart. And there's one guy wrote something meaningful. He goes, I didn't ask you how you're going to make your money or what profession you want. And who are you going to be? Who are you going to be? One guy wrote, I want to be a mentor. I want to be something, I want to be someone that my kids are going to be proud of. I want to be someone that my parents and grandparents will say, that's what we wanted our son to do. It was a very powerful lesson. Now that mission in Pirkei Avos, Ezu Asher, Ezu Gibor, Ezu Chacham, Ezu Mechubad. If you go around, you'll next to you guys will be in college, some of you, some may be back here. But when you get, you can come back to my bedroom, you get one of these, and then you go off to college, you ask these questions, you go and you want to make a YouTube video, see what do people respond. Ezu Asher. So people will give you answers. Asher, who's an Asher? Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, the guy in Mexico, you know, they'll start giving you listing off names of Ezu Asher, maybe somebody knows it, that it just made it big, it just cashed out in a high-tech firm. Ezu Gibor, right? You'll say Rory Klein, and you'll say some other hero, the guy Pat Tillman, played for the Arizona Cardinals. There are different people who've done courageous acts, got medals of honor, and so on and so forth. Who's honorable? Who's a chacham? He went to this college, got this degree, got this scholarship. But see, the Torah's view is totally not that. See, all those things, you think about it, all those things, all those answers are based on what? And the Torah is based on something just the opposite. All those answers are based on external factors. Every single one of them. How much wealth does he have in his bank account? Right? How many degrees does he have? What college did he go to? Or how many people, how many plaques does he have, guests of honor, you know, at the shul dinner? So how many medals? It's all based on external factors, what other people may say about him. But look what the Torah does. The Torah says all these four things that you would think are based on external factors are actually totally dependent upon yourself. You're independent of anyone else. And no matter what situation you are in, you can be all four of these things. You could be a Gibor, you could be an Ashir, you could be a Chacham, you could be a Mechubad. It's totally dependent on you. You and only you. And only you know the answer, whether you are one of those four things, or all four of those things. Only you can answer the question, no one else can. It's an unbelievable insight into the human situation. No one can take away any of those things from you. One of the books that I imagine some of you may have read, some of you, Shabbat guys probably have read it last year, if they didn't, before they came to Israel, or some of you may have read, I feel better if they force you to read it in high school, but it's a book called Man's Search for Meaning, written by Viktor Frankl. It's one of the most important books written. Viktor Frankl was a Holocaust survivor. He was a psychotherapist, a psychologist, before he went into the Holocaust. But after his experience and survived the Holocaust, it just furthered his intuition that he had beforehand, and he developed this therapy called logotherapy, which is that man needs meaning. in order to survive. He needs meaning in his life in order to live. And then once you figure out the why am I, do I want to live, you can figure out the how. And he said that's what he saw in his experiences in the concentration camps, and those people who lived for something beyond themselves, they had meaning in their lives. So the Nazis couldn't take anything away from them. And they were able to survive the worst hardships. Because they weren't defined by, you know, pleasures in life or money or outside things. They defined their life based on meaning beyond themselves. Whether it was religion, whether it was, you know, they wanted to reunite with a loved one. Whatever it was, whatever meaning they had, that gave them the will to live. So comes Rosh Hashanah, and we're remind ourselves of, through the shofar, of who we really are. And the truth is, you know, some guys, they come to Israel and they think, okay, the rabbis, all they're interested is changing us. They want us to change. That's all they're trying to do. So many Musa Shmuzes in this yeshiva, and the priest here, and then the Musa Shmuzes, and then there's the Tuesday night, all these things, trying to get us to change. And the truth is, we're not interested in getting to change. We think you're amazing just the way you are. Or as Billy Joel said it better. Also just the way you are, he said it better. Just not as many covers for his version, for the King of Mars version. But actually just the way you are. I think you're amazing. But it was just, who are you? Just the way you are. Who is the you? Is you, you know, I come from SAR, I come from Frisch, I come from this, I come from this place, I have this at home, I have these toys. That's not who you are. That's all externals. The real you between the Shama and the Dora. The part of God is within each and every one of us. And this is what we're trying to connect to on Rosh Hashanah. This is what the shofar reminds us of. And that is how we attach to the source of life. The Melech Chofetz Chaim, the King who desires life, who breathed life into each and every one of us on an individual level, wants us to be attached to the source of life, which is that part of us, Chelek Elokim, that is really who we are. So we're not trying to change you, we're just trying to help you express the real you. That real you will emerge and be the defining factor of who you are. And all those external factors are just, that's all they'll be. They'll be things that I can define. I can move out of. I can toss, easily cast away. That's not who I am. There's a beautiful video that HFH.com put out. Imagine some of you probably seen it. It's gone somewhat viral. And it's a video of Rachel Frankel, Polly's mom, and describing what happened this summer. And she says, amongst other things in the video, but it basically says, you know, what happened this summer was real. The Jewish people came together. Everyone prayed and was, you know, we stopped whatever we were doing. And we came together as people. And those of you who were in summer camp, I'm sure you all probably felt this on some level. And those of you who were home and watching the news and keeping up on social media, and everyone was diving through these three got boys, and then when the war started, we came together as people and we felt united. Certainly if you were in this country for the summer, you felt that. Even if you're out of this country, you felt we're more people. I went to the hotel, and it's still cold away in the beginning. You know, we couldn't move. And it was an amazing thing. When I got there like 5 minutes before it was supposed to start, and I looked empty. I was so disappointed, but empty. All of a sudden, it was cold for like 7 o'clock, all of a 7 o'clock, I turned around, and wall to wall, from the western wall all the way back to the back from Tiv Aryeh, all the way back. All of a sudden got filled, classic Israelis. They came like the last minute, boom. Place was packed. And all the time Jews. And he felt, this is something unbelievable, something new. He said it was the rest, but this was real. It wasn't just a dream, it wasn't just like, that's the real us. The real Jewish people came out. When I went to visit Moshe Hurd, who I got to know if Alex is not here, but Alex's brother was here, he was here on Saturday night. So he got hurt. Nothing to do with his name. But he was injured, he brought him, he's fine. But I went to visit him. I came in the hospital. He wasn't in the hospital for 12 hours. I walked in, he was in Tel Shomer Hospital. I walk into the room, and the room is wall to wall, food, packages, socks, underwear, the stuffed animals, balloons, flowers, whatever you... Masha, you know what's that? It was there. It was unbelievable. Where did it come from? Like, I thought I was, like, the first guy to see him. You know, a WhatsApp got sent out. There's a Chayal Bodin. There's a lone soldier. In Tel Shomer Hospital. And all of a sudden, Jewish people came out. And the truth is, it wasn't just him. I went there because when I got there, they said, Moshe Hurd. They said, one second. And they said, you have to speak to the person in charge. Like, who are you?
I said, I teach him. I taught him. He's a student.
Okay, you go. What's the problem? He said, no, there's so many people who come. You know, just he's an inundated visitor. We can't let anyone in. So people, instead of giving him, they gave to other soldiers. There were other soldiers on the ward. And I walked past and went into the different soldiers. Every room was packed full of stuff. Unbelievable response. Jewish people want, that's the natural, the full position. And Rav Kook explains is that the reason is because we all share that neshama, that chelek alokam imam, is actually something that we share not only with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but kutshubichu, Oraisa Yisrael Padu, actually something called Nishma Yisrael that all of us share. That we're all connected. Every single one of us is connected. Every Jew is connected to a fellow Jew. And what's called Nishma Yisrael. There are different names for it. Different rabbis call it different things. But it's what you call it Knesset Yisrael. Rav Kook called it Nishma Yisrael, but everyone agrees. That we all have shared part of the same Nishma. So in our core, and when we get to who we really are, we want people. And she said so beautifully, Rachel Kaifa, I said, you know, in summer we went searching for our voice. But we found ourselves. That's what we found. And that's what Rosh Hashanah is about. It's about finding ourselves, connecting to the real, real part of ourselves. That's who I really am. Anything I may have done in the past is not really me. I can cast away easily. But Shlomo, I am part of you. And that's who I want to be. And that is what defines me. I want to attach myself to you, the source of life. That will guarantee us a Ksiva Kutsim Torah. You can see how in the basement, I'm sorry to dump it on you guys when all these other guys are not here this year.